This podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. For this week only, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, congrats. You've got extra holiday spending money. If you lose, congratulations to you as well. MyBookie will give you your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk, all gravy. It doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer. MyBookie welcomes all to come play, so quit waiting around and sign up today. Do you find yourself wanting to sports bet but have a lot of questions? Don't sweat it. MyBookie's patient customer service team can walk you through the process. And the best part is, if you join now, you'll still have one last shot to take advantage of their incredible sign-up offer. Just log into MyBookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code MENACE, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll, and that's on top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and risk-free bet for this week only. So if you're a true football fan, you do not want to let this opportunity pass you by. You simply can't lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get in on the action with MyBookie. It is Monday, November 25th, Thanksgiving week. A lot to be thankful for. Really fired up about this week and just the weekend and what happened and everything that went on. And what a great game between Ohio State and Penn State. A sloppy game, but a great game. And really want to thank everybody that showed up and turned out for the our first tailgate. I think it was awesome. I mean, the response we all got was excellent. And it was an awesome first event, and it's only going to get better. I'm so excited to do it again. We're going to do it for the spring game, and we're trying to figure out if we're going to do it for every home game or select home games next fall. We're going to look at doing some remote tailgates, some away games, and then we're eventually going to expand into some other schools, because I know this is we have a national listener base. And if we learned one thing Saturday, we can put on a decent party. But I do want to thank Buckeye Vodka, who we ran out of Buckeye Vodka. We had to go make a run. So people loved that Buckeye Vodka. And then North High Brewing Company and Rogue Brewery for providing beer. And then Giant Eagle. The food was outstanding. Giant Eagle, Shade on the Canal. The wings were ridiculous. And then also Revelry Tavern, who made the most ridiculous cheesy potatoes, and then Nashville hot chicken dip or something like that. And then Katzinger's Deli for the awesome desserts. It was a ridiculous spread. I think the people did a great job trying to keep the food as warm as possible, considering how cold it was. But anyways, it was a great event, and really fired up about it. And thankful for everyone that showed up, had awesome conversation, loved interacting with everyone. And if you didn't catch it, make sure you come check out the one at the spring game. And we're going to look into doing maybe one for a bowl game or Big Ten championship or something. But anyways, just wanted to get that out of the way and really thank everyone for coming. And if you missed it, come check it out. But let's get to the show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Welcome to episode 48, Menace to Sports. Really fired up about this episode and really all four episodes this week. We have some awesome stuff. We're going to break down Ohio State, Penn State in this episode. Talk a little bit about that game, kind of what I saw when I rewatched it yesterday. And then also in the next couple episodes, we're going to do an entire episode centered around the game, the greatest rivalry in all of sport. And we have some awesome guests coming on for that episode. So make sure you stay tuned and look out for that one. It's going to be one of my favorite episodes I think we've ever done. I'm really excited about it. But let's talk about some of the current events. The most, I guess, hilarious current event was Tom Herman getting his team jacked up, headbutting the shit out of one of his D tackles or something like that, and getting them fired up to take a 24-10 grade A ass whooping at the courtesy of the Baylor Bears. Wow, was that embarrassing. So funny story about that. Tom Herman used to do that before every game at Ohio State. And I was in the locker room, and it was, I guess it was his way to kind of put himself at center stage and make a spectacle of himself. He used to headbutt Corey Linsley, our center, and he just worked down the line of who he would headbutt. And it was funny because Mike Vrabel in 2012 was like, after he first saw it, he was like, just talking to me in a side conversation, he was like, that's some soft shit. Like, you want to be a real tough guy. Like, you don't position the helmet perfectly and hit the plastic with your head so that it's like, it doesn't hurt you. He was like, you want to be a real tough guy, you grab the face mask and slam face. And I was just laughing so hard. And then before the Michigan game, Vrabel was so amped. I mean, so jacked and ready for the game. Tom did his cute little headbutt thing, and Vrabel pushed him away. He said, you pussy, here's how you fucking do it. And grabbed Corey Linsley by the face mask and headbutted the shit out of his face mask. I mean, his head instantly burst open, blood everywhere. If you go back and look at the pictures, Vrabel had a bandage on his head the whole game because he screwed himself up bad. But I just thought it was so funny seeing that charade that Tom Herman did before the game, and then watching them just get their ass handed to him. And it begs to question, like, at what point are Texas faithful going to get real sick and tired of Tom Herman? I think they are already. And anything that I can do to help push that movement along, because he's an absolute clown of a person. And he was a good football coach. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, he's relying on that Tim Beck offense, or really the Tom Herman offense, to just run the quarterback and throw shitty pass plays and hope for the best. And run trick plays every now and then to catch him off guard. But it's definitely a bad time to be a Texas Longhorn. And I read a funny insider message board deal about a big-time prominent booster is trying to raise the funds because he thinks that he can get Urban Meyer to come to Texas. And I was like, oh, my God, here we go. It's Florida State, Texas, USC, Notre Dame. They're talking about they might fire Brian Kelly for Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer might catch like five bodies this offseason of people trying to fire their coach to try to get him. And ultimately, I don't think it's going to happen. And I was asked that at the tailgate a number of times. Like, do you think Urban actually comes back and coaches again? And I know on preseason, I said, I think he would. I had some insider info about the USC job. And I think he would have flirted with that job. He would have thought about taking that job. Problem being, and here's why I think that. He needs that fix. He needs that adrenaline. He needs that competition. He's insane in a good way. He's that competitive. And I really think that he's getting that fix right now. You watch him in the pregame or before the game when they had Fox Big Noon Kickoff, had an outdoor setup. I mean, they're really going after game day right now. And I saw that spark when he was talking about his show being there. And he said, the Big Ten Network's here, that other show's here, and then Fox Big Noon Kickoff is to be set up right outside the RPAC. He wouldn't even say their name like they're the rivalry. It's like that's his new fix. Is he goes on this show and he wants to just go after ESPN. And that's what he's doing right now. He is going after ESPN. And I don't think he gets back in coaching because I think he's getting the adrenaline rush right now, kicking ESPN's ass. And he loves it. He loves it. So that's what I see. That's what I see in his future. I don't think he gets into coaching. So hopefully they don't, too many coaches don't get fired in the pursuit of Urban, because I think Urban is now a TV personality and an analyst. He is no longer going to be a football coach. Another weird thing that came up, I don't know if people saw this, but Larry Johnson, the D-line coach at Ohio State, his son tweeted out, one thing I do hate is my talented and gifted father wasting his talents for Ryan Day. Without my father, he would be another sharecropper. There will come a time where my father knows he's an Israelite. That's bizarre to say the least. One thing I would tell you is Larry Johnson is extremely talented, one of the best coaches in the country, but that's such an odd thing to tweet. I get he's a Penn State grad. Maybe he was mad that his dad helped beat Penn State or something, but his father's an Israelite. If you want to follow him, he has some bizarre tweets sometimes, and I think he tries to be like really woke, but really interesting to go after his dad. His dad's career choices. I mean, he props his dad up, says he's talented and gifted. I don't think it's a shot at his dad, but I think his dad could leave if he wanted to. I don't think he's wasting his talents for Ryan Day, and I certainly don't think Ryan Day would be another sharecropper. Not really sure what that means, but I don't think that Larry Johnson is the reason Ryan Day's having success. I think he's obviously an asset, but trust me, Greg Madison's a phenomenal defensive line coach. If Larry was not to be there, someone else could get Chase Young to play really well. Not to discount what Larry does. Larry's the best in the business, but I just thought that was really bizarre. One other thing I want to talk about before we get to the Ohio State-Penn State game was just, I was reflecting on Sunday. Just after watching the game and watching some of those players, just Chris Olave making big plays, KJ Hill making big plays, and then watching some kids yesterday in the NFL, like Terry McLaurin made a huge catch on 3rd and 5 from Dwayne Haskins to set up the game-winning field goal for the Redskins. And it got me thinking about recruiting and just how recruiting worked, what it was like to recruit those kids, and what you really look for in recruiting. In my experience is you want to get players that love to grind. And all those kids I just mentioned, they love to grind. I think about my experience with guys like Paris Campbell, Terry McLaurin, Austin Mack, Chris Olave, all very underrated recruits, and I loved it because I evaluated them. I saw the talent there, and I saw that these recruiting services were missing on them. Well, I mean, and Austin Mack, we ended up getting him bumped in recruiting because he committed to us so early, and we really pushed these services to help get him in the Army game and all this other stuff. So that does happen, in case people were wondering. But those kids, they had that underranked or under recruited or underrated, no bullshit attitude of just go to work, screw everything else, just go to work, just grind, just work. And those kids became, look at Terry McLaurin. He's the best rookie receiver in the NFL. And this kid was sitting in Urban Meyer's office. He came to camp. I loved him. Urban didn't watch him. We came in to have our meeting, and I think I mentioned it before. I told Urban I wanted to offer him, and he almost fired me. He was like, "What? Who? That kid? There's no kid out. There's no receiver out there that can play at Ohio State. What's wrong with you?" And he went after me, and I was like, "Coach, I'm telling you, this kid has a chance to be really good. He's raw. It's going to take some work, but he has a chance, and he can really run. And he's a great kid. I got to know him. I could tell he was a hard worker. That's what coaches want. If you are a recruit, if you know a recruit, or if you even ever talk to a recruit, a high school kid." Just grind. Love the game. Be passionate about the game. Commit to the game. I even think about really highly recruited kids that had that mentality, like the Bosas, Garrett Wilson, Raekwon McMillan, Jalen Holmes, Taraja Mitchell will be a great player at Ohio State in the future. Those kids are committed to the grind. They don't believe all the hype and bullshit. They don't transfer 6 times and flip schools 20 times. It doesn't happen because they get it. They know that recruiting rankings and stars and all that, it's cool and all, and you need to enjoy it, but you need to grind and commit. Because I, you know how many 5 stars I've seen just be average players, and they were so talented. Compare that to the 3 stars that I and not just me, other coaches had identified and said, man, this kid is a grinder. He's got that it factor. He loves football. He's going to work. And they end up leaving a first-round draft pick or a great player or whatever. Like JT Barrett is a great example. Very under-recruited, underrated, one of the better quarterbacks in the history of Ohio State. I mean, that's what coaches want. That's what coaches look for. Grinders that love the game of football and are going to commit to becoming a great player. Because I don't care who you are, you're not going to be a great player unless you commit to maximizing yourself. And some of these kids I'm watching Ohio State, and that's what Ohio State does better than anyone, I think. Ohio State, Alabama, they maximize their players. I think Clemson has talented players. I don't think they maximize their players like Ohio State does, like Alabama does. I really don't. And so I had to get that off my chest, a little recruiting rant to start the day, because I think it's so important for people to know, people to hear. I mean, those kids grind. Michael Thomas was a 3-star receiver out of LA, didn't get offered by any California schools. Ohio State, before I got there, they signed him and they put him in prep school because they thought he was more of a project. But he came in and grinded. I mean, grinded. Worked. He worked harder than any player I've ever seen. And now you watch him. He's the best receiver in the National Football League. Just signed a contract for $100 million. Think about that. He went from 3-star to the best at what he does. Why? Because he worked and he committed to maximizing himself. If I asked him to do something, he did more than I asked him to do in every respect of coaching. If I asked him to go hard, he went too hard. It was funny because Jeff Ireland was the player personnel guy for the Saints, or he was. He said, and Sean Payton, they both were at our office, and they said, Michael Thomas goes so hard in walkthroughs, they often don't put him in because they could get in trouble. It's like a practice. And one time Sean Payton said he went up to simulate press man, and Michael Thomas almost threw him on the ground, almost broke his arm because he's that intense. And I just think about how that applies to all walks of life. Like, if you have a profession, if you have a career, and you apply that same mentality, like, I want to maximize myself in my profession. I want to work harder than anyone else in the world works at my profession. How successful would you be? That's what I'm trying to do right now. I'm trying to apply it to business and entrepreneurship. I'm trying to apply that Michael Thomas mentality to it. Like, I'm going to go so hard at this podcast or this platform or the other businesses that I'm a part of. I'm going to go so hard at that, that I have to succeed. I can't fail if you put that much investment into it. All right, that's enough of my rant. Just had to talk about that because I'm just watching some of these kids making millions of dollars, and it's like, that is so earned. You don't realize it. They earn that money. And they're just realizing their dreams because of the work they put in. But anyways, let's get to this Ohio State Penn State game. We'll go quick break from one of our sponsors, get a message, let you know about one of our supporters, and then we'll dive into the Penn State game right back after this. Breaking news. This important PSA is brought to you by Manscaped.com. This is your public service announcement. The Manscaped engineering team spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new and improved Lawnmower 3.0. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. Millions of balls are about to be nick-free thanks to Manscaped's advanced skin-safe technology. I've been talking about Manscaped for a while now, and at the tailgate, we had a number of people that obviously are new customers, thanks to the show. So I think there's a lot of ladies out there that can thank Menace to Sports for having some trimmed up manscaped areas. But if you use the Lawnmower 2.0, it's an easy transition because it's the same replacement blade with a new improved skin safe technology. When I tell you this is premium, I mean premium. The battery will last up to 90 minutes so you can take a longer shave. One of the coolest new features is the LED light, which illuminates grooming areas for a closer, more precise trimming. They've also upgraded to a 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology. And let's not forget about the charging stand. Show your mower off loud and proud because this intelligently designed stand is a rapid charging dock powered by USB. If you're listening to me speak right now, you're one of the first people to hear about this life-changing product, and I want you to experience it firsthand for yourself. Trim that junk of yours. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code MENACE at manscaped.com. And as always, your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping using the code MENACE at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code MENACE. Ohio State, Penn State, top 10 matchup. Big, big win for the Buckeyes. And they really have a two-game season left. Got to beat the team up north in this rivalry game this weekend and then win the Big Ten, and then they're off to playoff land. But was it an awesome game. And it was exactly what I thought it would be. I said in the preview show and all the whole tailgate, people were asking what I thought. And it was my message has always been the same, that in that game, if they turned the ball over, it would be closer than it should have been. And that's exactly what happened. The three turnovers kept Penn State in it. And then a really shitty third quarter, three series, really a 17-point run. And then all of a sudden they're in a dogfight, still win by 11. But, it was cold, kind of cold. It wasn't too bad. It was a little chilly. And then there was just a light rain. It wasn't like a downpour, but it was a light rain. And everyone outside of not our tailgate, we were covered, but like the varsity club and everyone walking down the street, they're just drenched. Even though it was a light rain, it was a consistent light rain. And so it was rough. It was a rough atmosphere. And that has been, those atmospheres have bit Ohio State in the ass so many times that if I'm a Buckeye fan, I'm thankful that it didn't happen again. But here's the stat you need to know. Everyone talked about it at the tailgate. Everyone knows my passion. It is, I think it's 100% on the year. If you win the missed tackle battle, you win the game. Period, point blank, game over. So here it is. Ohio State, 7 missed tackles on the day in the rain. That's excellent. I mean, it's harder to bring guys down. People are slippery. I mean, it's 7 missed tackles. That's it. Penn State, 13 missed tackles. It's undefeated, ladies and gentlemen, undefeated. Penn State missed more tackles than Ohio State. Ohio State wins. I mean, I could stop there. I think from now on, when I analyze a game, I'm just going to do missed tackles and then shut the show off. Shut it off. What else matters? And you know what was really impressive? I mentioned it on the pregame show. Penn State had, I think, twice as many drops or more than twice as many drops into Ohio State. KJ Hamler had as many drops as Ohio State's team as a whole. Penn State only had one drop ball in the entire game, and Ohio State only had two. And in the rain, that three drops between both teams, that's impressive. I mean, what a great job by Brian Hartline and who, the Penn State staff, getting their guys ready to catch wet balls. Granted, neither team threw the ball a lot, so that probably played into it a little bit. But just an outstanding receiving effort across the board. And here's what this was. This was an 11-point win against a top 10 team after coughing up the ball three times. 10 points off of those turnovers, and the other turnover negating a touchdown as Justin Fields goes in the end zone. That is a self-inflicted 17-point disadvantage and still a double-digit win. In reality, this should have been minimally a 3-touchdown win. And I think my analysis before the game was, if they don't turn the ball over and if it's nice out, this is a 21-point victory for Ohio State. And that's exactly what it was. That's how they played. After jumping out to a 21-0 lead, Ohio State shot themselves in the foot over and over and over and allowed Penn State to crawl back in the game, going on a 17-point run in the third quarter. It took 4 minutes, 4 minutes off the game clock, and 17 points were on the board just like that. It was unbelievable. And here's what's crazy. I've been in games like that where someone just, I mean, hits a crazy stride, hits momentum. You shoot yourself in the foot a couple times, and all of a sudden you're like, shit, man, we're in a game now. And when momentum shifts like this, I used to tell my guys all the time, somebody has to make a play, not just a play, a big play. One of those plays that completely stops their momentum, flips the script, and gets that train rolling back in your direction. Somebody has to do it. Somebody has to ignite the match to light the fire. And I used to challenge them, say, who's it going to be? Which one of you wants to win the game so bad that you're going to be the one that changes this entire momentum shift? And on Saturday, that someone was true sophomore Chris Olave, making a ridiculous contested catch in the right corner of the end zone. That was the play of the game. You could talk about any other play, but that play, the late throw by Justin Fields to make an open Chris Olave become a contested covered Chris Olave, and for him to climb the ladder, go up, and make that play, that was the play of the game. That play shifted back momentum and got Ohio State back on track. It was everything. It was the entire game in one play. You want to talk about a performance, though. That Ohio State defense was suffocating. The first half was one of the finest halves of defensive football that I've seen. Penn State had 10 yards rushing and 3 yards passing at half. 3 yards passing and 10 yards rushing. It's ridiculous what this defense did. At the end of the game, under 100 yards rushing, 2.75 yards per rush, 5 sacks, 35% on third and fourth down, complete dominance. Sean Clifford, before he got knocked out of the game in the third quarter, he threw the ball over 10 yards twice, 2 times over 10 yards. That is defensive football right there. He was 1-for-2 over 10 yards. Everything was short. That is insane. The lowest graded offensive player on Penn State was Sean Clifford, 33%. I think that's the lowest I've seen from a starter all year, let alone the quarterback. Really bad. To the point where when Clifford went out of the game, Will Levis comes in and provided a spark and threw up 17 points before Ohio State was able to handle anything, get their handle on it. After the game, James Franklin even said Clifford could have went back in the game, but they made the decision to keep him on the sideline to try to provide a spark. That's a hell of a risk and a hell of a task to ask for your first time playing significant minutes, be it on the road against a number two team and the absolute best defense in the country. Have fun, Will. Let's see what you got. But let's talk about the silver bullet defense. The highest graded player on defense. And this one made me so happy for a kid, because this kid is awesome, an awesome kid, a talented kid, and he's been through so much injury adversity. The highest graded player on defense was Justin Hilliard. Now, he only played 7 snaps on defense, 7. But he had one of the biggest plays and really the game-sealing interception at the end. He graded out 95% on 7 snaps. That's not a huge impact, but to be in 7 snaps, grade out that high, and make that definitive play to end the game, I mean, just so happy for Justin Hilliard. And then the second highest grade, the comeback kid. Back, he's back. The Predator, Chase Young, 90% grade out. He played dominant, man. He played dominant. They could not block him. They had to hold him. I mean, tackle him. They were just, I mean, it got to the point where I think the refs felt bad for the O-line. They weren't throwing flags when he was getting just absolutely molested, because I guess they just felt, they're like, what do you want the tackle to do? They can't block that kid. The best series on defense that I saw after rewatching it was after Justin Fields' fumble. Think about it. Up by 7, Penn State trotted on the field with a 14-point run and all the momentum lining up at Ohio State's 35. Sudden change. So we talk about critical down and distances, sudden change. That is the critical defense. On third down, can you get teams off the field? In sudden change, can you bow up and not let a team score after a turnover, after a long punt return, after something like that? What that defense did on that drive was just demoralize Penn State, and it stopped their momentum on offense right then and there. The defense nutted up and only allowed 11 yards on 8 plays, ending the drive on Chase Young and Jayshon Cornell's sack. And they had to kick a field goal. It took all momentum that Penn State had, all the wind out of their sails, gone. It was the most critical defensive series of the season, and they bowed up. Now, I will say this. I've heard a number of people calling Pete Warner a liability in coverage, and I don't think people realize what he did in this game. And I didn't, at the tailgate, I watched the game, but, you know, I was in conversation. It was hard to really see what all was going on. I saw some replays and here and there, so I had to go back and really watch the film yesterday. And I don't think people realize what Pete Warner was asked to do. The defensive staff locked him up on Pat Freiermuth, who's one of the better tight ends in the country. And Penn State's game plan was to try to take advantage of that matchup. And that matchup went Pete Warner's way more than it didn't. Pete was in coverage 28 snaps, targeted 10 times, only allowed 6 catches for 48 yards. He finished the day with 9 tackles and an assist. I think Pete Warner, it might not be the player of the game, but he's up there. He played excellent. I mean, they flexed the tight end out and tried to get one-on-one with against Pete Warner. That was their game plan. Get this liability in coverage and attack him. And it didn't work. That was their entire game plan for Penn State. Get isolations on Pete Warner and attack him with their tight end. It did not work. Pete was ready, and he played exceptional. When you get targeted in a game plan like that, you're going to give up a play or two. But 6 catches, 48 yards on the entire day, 28 snaps in coverage, he played really well. I mean, granted, he could have played better. He could have allowed 0 or 3 or 4, but I think he played extremely well. Overall, I think the defense was lights out. I think sometimes when people watch football games, they see like a completed pass as like a complete failure and there's someone to blame. Like Malik Harrison, 28 snaps in coverage. He was targeted in coverage 4 times for 4 catches. People would say, man, that's awful. He didn't play well. On those 4 catches, Penn State got 6 total yards. That's exceptional. That's excellent. And I look at this, I thought the secondary played decent. Damon Arnett had I feel like he talks sometimes and it distracts him from being a good player. But 0 catches on 3 targets. It was a great job. Okuda led up, had 2 catches that I remember for minimal yardage. I think it was 32 yards total. The guy that really played well to me was Jordan Fuller, though. Jordan Fuller played extremely well. Just managing the middle of the field. He didn't do a lot. I mean, he didn't get targeted in the past game. He only had 2 tackles, which is really a testament to the front 7. The ball didn't ever get to him. But I think he did a great job of just being the general running the defense from that post safety position. It was excellent. The defensive line, as always, played phenomenal. Jayshon Cornell is a stud, and people continue to underappreciate him. He was dominant. B.B. Landers was excellent in the middle. And then, obviously, Chase Young was a freak off the edge. And you know who really played well was Baron Browning. Baron Browning, he only had, I think, what? He had 3 quarterback pressures. He had 4 or 5 tackles. But he was ridiculous. I mean, making plays in the backfield. I know he lost a shoe on one and did like a little crawl afterwards. Really intimidating. But I think the guy that I really didn't feel an impact from was Tyreek Smith. I mean, he could have played better. They need him to play better. They need that other defensive end position to be really good to free up Chase Young. Otherwise, all attention is already going to go to him. But they need that other defensive end position to take over. If people are doubling, chipping, and doing all this stuff, all this attention on the best player in college football, the other side has to get off. Has to. Zach Harrison, they need more production out of the other defensive end. I didn't think they played bad, but I think they could have done a better job, needless to say. But I thought the defense was excellent. I mean, you give up under 100 yards rushing and get after the quarterback like that. And really, outside of 4 minutes, they played complete dominant football. And the offense really put them in bad field position on some of those turnovers. Just really, you can't do that to your defense. But all in all, great defensive performance. Now I want to flip it to the other side of the ball, talk about a little bit of Ohio State's offense, Penn State's defense, kind of how that went. But real quick, we'll take a break and be right back after this. Are you tired of paying your bookie every weekend because your lock of the week is as reliable as a Jim Harbaugh game plan? What if you could leverage a data analytics group who has consistently predicted results for the last 4 years with a 60% documented success rate? The guys at ProAthletics.com have done just that and want you to get in on the action for free this week. Yep, for free. With 100% transparency, their model has resulted in them being the only handicapping group in the world to finish in the top 100 the last 3 years in the Las Vegas Super Contest, the globe's largest handicapping contest. I personally used their picks this weekend and went 7-1 in college football. I'm 18-5 overall using their college football platform for the last 3 weeks. Yeah, you heard me correct. 18-5. No joke, it's free money. I hit a three-team parlay on Saturday. They want you to see the truth so bad that they are giving away a free week of all sports with code MENACE. Again, code MENACE gets you a 1 week VIP pass for free. No strings attached, no BS. Trust me and try it out. You literally have nothing to lose. If you want to sign up for the remainder of the season, you can use code MENACE50, the number 50, for 50% off any package. Don't let another losing weekend get the best of your wallet. Head to pro, as in P-R-O, mathletics.com to start winning today. All right, welcome back. Let's talk about this Buckeye offense and Justin Fields, and the rain did not help. Let's start with that. But it wasn't that bad. I mean, I was out there. It rained. It was wet, but it wasn't a downpour. What happened? Ohio State got the job done, but it wasn't an easy task against the nation's best rush defense. It wasn't easy. Simple as that. 61 rushing attempts in the rain, and averaged 3.75 yards per carry. Their season low and almost half of their season average. It was not a good day running the football. Simple as that. I mean, it was, I think JK had a decent day. We'll get into that in a minute, but Justin Fields, I think, it was a tale of two Justin Fields, really. It was by far his worst performance of the year, by far his lowest grade of the season at 58%. He fumbled the ball three times, only lost two of them, but you can't fumble the ball once, let alone three times. And especially when you're going in the end zone. Like, if you fumble the ball on the 50, it's like, all right, we just got to go play defense. We might have punted anyways. But as you're going in the end zone, that's when you got to, I don't want to say clench the ball tighter, because you always need to hold it tight, but you can't do that. That's 7 points off the board on just a lapse in decision making and how to hold the football. You when you watch a guy carrying the football, that it needs to be tight to his body, his elbow locked down to his body. We always used to say wrist above elbow, or we say chin, the point to the sky. The minute that point gets low, or you see that arm drop down a little bit, that's when it's easy to knock the ball out, especially when it's wet. So the ball security by Justin Fields when he was running was terrible. Terrible. And in the pocket. Three fumbles, can't do it. 16 of 22, 188 yards and two touchdowns, 2 of 4 on deep balls. He threw the ball really well, especially considering the elements. They just didn't ask him to do a lot. He threw the ball, 73% completion, 82% adjusted completion percentage with two drops. But Ryan Day didn't ask him to do much with his arm, simply. The most interesting thing he did was run him and ran the shit out of him. Early in the game, it felt like Tim Beck was back in Columbus and Urban was yelling at him over the headset to run JT. I was having flashbacks to the first two quarters. I was like, oh my God, get this kid out and put JK at quarterback. But 21 carries for your only quarterback that can win a football game on your entire roster, that's a lot. But it is that time of year. It's time to win at all costs. You can't protect and hold back such a dynamic athlete all year and expect to hoist the national championship trophy in January. You can't do it. You have to cut him loose at some point. At some point, you have to let him go. Run some zone reads. Run some quarterback draws. Run some things that are just so devastating to a defense. I mean, if you don't employ some form of quarterback run game, you are giving up the most lethal thing that an offense has. That's called equating numbers. Think about it. If the quarterback is the one carrying the ball, 10 guys are blocking for him. That means it's a one-on-one, and Justin Fields will win that one-on-one. It's simple math, right? If you do a direct handoff and hand it to the running back, you now have the quarterback doing nothing. So that takes one guy out of the equation. Now you have nine guys blocking 11. Now it's 1-on-2. They can outgap you. They can outplus you. And there's ways to run the ball still, running away from guys and things like that. But to run the quarterback is the best equated number situation. And they did it. So they had to do it at some point. At some point, Justin Fields was going to get cut loose. And it's evident that that point, the leash came off starting this past Saturday. And now, watch out. That kid is going to put up some insane stats, especially when they let him throw the ball more. Because he threw it, awesome. I really had one or two missed throws that I saw the whole game. And here's what's really cool. Looking forward, the top three graded players on offense for Ohio State, number one, Chris Olave. Number two, KJ Hill. Number three, Garrett Wilson on only 28 snaps. How about that? Needless to say, number one, the future of Zone 6 is really bright. Not to mention the ridiculous class Hartline has been putting together to supplement the loss of KJ, Ben, Victor, Austin Mack. But the future is really bright. And I mentioned it before the show, that's what this team needs. They need Chris Olave making big plays. He's certainly capable. They need those explosions downfield. KJ Hill with an unbelievable touchdown on Saturday. Big play. The future is bright in Zone 6 and with this offense if they let Justin Fields throw the ball. And now Penn State's defense, they played really well. Micah Parsons, my God, he played outstanding. He highest graded guy on defense, 88%. I will tell you this, the lowest two graded players on offense were the two tackles at Ohio State, Thayer Mumford and Brandon Bowen. And when I watched the game, I thought they played poor. I mean, it's simple as that, poor. I knew this pass rush would be an issue for the O-line. They didn't have a Chase Young, but they had a very effective pass rush going into the game. But both tackles grading out that low, that is problematic and concerning for this coming week and the hopeful playoff run because Michigan's defense is salty. Thayer Mumford had a really rough day. He was the lowest graded player on offense, 54.9%. Small caveat, that was double Penn State's starting quarterback's grade, FYI. But here's his issue when I watched Thayer play, and I was talking about it to a couple guys at the tailgate. He is very athletic. He has the potential to be very good, but he is fundamentally very poor. He doesn't move his feet well, and he's a waistbender. You'll see it every time he loses in pass pro. He gets lazy with his feet, waist bends, like bends at the waist, and gets his hands swiped or gets countered back inside and loses. He does not play with a good, what we used to call a football position, a good bend, like a reverse arc in your back. Like imagine squatting down and then sticking your chest out. That's the position you play football in. Not hunchback, waist bending. You bend at the ankles, the hips, and the knees. And that's what he doesn't do well. He gets very top heavy at times. But the two tackles, they allowed five pressures combined in a low passing contest. And the edge protectors are showing up as the greatest weaknesses of this team. The Achilles heel of Ohio State right now, if you may, for this Buckeye team is the tackles, the pillars on the edge. The interior O-line has really developed and improved. I'm impressed. I was critical of the entire offensive line beginning of the year. I think the interior three linemen have really improved. Josh Myers should probably be the most improved player on the team. That's how much better he's playing. They only allowed one pressure the entire day, and they played really well in the run game. The offense definitely showed some sparks. They made some huge plays, but it was a very sloppy and inefficient all day. Third down was very concerning. The execution in the run game on third down was awful. Third and medium, so third and 3-6, that should be Ohio State's dominant situation. That's where you are a great third down team and really a great offense because you're good on first and second down. You get to third and four, and you convert like a knife through butter on that third and medium. That's what I always looked at and said, on third and medium, how good is a team? Because that'll tell you how drives are going to go. They keep drives alive. And on Saturday, it was really concerning. The execution of the run game was awful. Third and medium, there were six attempts, 33%, 2 of 6, with their conversions coming on a Justin Fields designed run and a Master T grinding it out, a first down on third and four. Those are their two conversions on third and medium. I think the reality is Master Teague needs to be the third down back. He's better in pass pro than JK. His ball skills aren't as good as JK. but he's that bigger body back that can go get you 4 yards. J.K. Dobbins had his number called 6 out of the 13 third downs on Saturday. Almost half. He only converted 1 on 3rd and 2. 1 of 6. Now, J.K. had an outstanding overall performance, which was much needed to grind this win out for sure. Much like was needed and delivered versus Wisconsin a couple weeks ago. 176 yards is respectable. But don't look at that stat line and look at one cute run and say that was a dominant performance. It wasn't. It was more of a stats by volume day. Carrying the ball 36 times. That's 20 more carries than JK's average going into the game of 16. 33% more than his previous season high. The most he ever carried the ball all year was 24 times. Now he carried it 36. I don't know. I don't have the stat in front of me, but that's what, around 4 yards a carry? That's not dominant. When you run the ball 61 times, like Ohio State did on Saturday, it's evident of a couple things, and it could be a combination of any or a conglomerate reason. Number one, the weather and confidence in winning a physical battle. That's the first point. It's rainy. It's sloppy. We're confident that we can win a toe-to-toe slug match, and so you go for it. Let's take this thing to the ground. The second point of contention is lack of confidence throwing the ball and protecting the quarterback. Sometimes it's not that you don't have faith in the quarterback throwing it and the receivers catching it. It's that you don't know how well you're going to protect the quarterback. And especially if your quarterback is the only quarterback on your roster that can win a game, you really got to be careful. Even if he's Peyton Manning or Tom Brady back there, you got to be careful, because if he gets hit once the wrong way, yikes. That's a bad, bad deal. And the third thing is the desire to shorten the game and just wear the clock out, which Ohio State did that. That game was over and done. I think it was 3.5 hours or something like that. And it was by design. They were going to shorten that clock and get out of there with a win. But like I said at the beginning, all in all, this was not a close game. It seemed close for a minute when they put up 17 points, but you win by 11 after turning it over 3 times in the rain, shitty weather. You're going to take that all day, every day, if you think you're the best team in the country. I mean, you're playing a top 10 team. It's supposed to be a close game. You win by 11 and you play like shit, kind of. That's a hell of a deal. If that is playing like shit, winning by 11, boy, people are going to be really happy in Buckeye Nation. But it was a big win. Good win. I'm looking forward to the next episode tomorrow. I really want to talk about really the huge upset on the West Coast. Arizona State beating Oregon, leaving Utah really to be the lone chance at a playoff berth. So I want to talk about that game. I want to talk about LSU, Arkansas, 56-20. Another great offensive performance, but giving up 20 points to Arkansas, granted late in the game. So I want to talk about that, kind of what it means for LSU. Also going to detail old Texas Tom, the flight attendant man, and his big loss to the future Penn State coach Matt Rhule and the Baylor Bears, 24-10. Going to break that game down. Also want to talk about Georgia and their 6-point victory, I guess, against Texas A&M and their just complete disgusting offense. So we're going to break that down in the next episode, but I appreciate you guys joining us. I appreciate everybody who came out to the tailgate. Really had a blast. I know you guys did too. So stay tuned. This week's going to be awesome. I'm really excited. These are going to be probably my favorite episodes that we've had to date, starting with this one. I loved really that game, analyzing it with the tailgate and everything, but as always, if you're interested in sponsorship or advertising, reach out, Zach@menacetosocietypodcast.com. And looking forward to, I think, December 1st, we're going to try to launch our expanded version of this platform. So stay tuned. Have a great Thanksgiving week, short week. Shouldn't have to work all week, right? Should have at least Thursday, Friday off. So let's enjoy the week and be thankful. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I hope you were educated and entertained. And to bring this one back, as we always say, if you weren't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.